Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to tonight's regularly scheduled city council meeting. The meeting is called to order, and we kindly ask our city clerk to please take the roll call.
Chuck Brown.
Here.
Donald Cummings.
Here.
Ralph Dantino.
Here.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Here.
Sam Hill.
Here.
Dean Kilburg.
Here.
Craig Maladra.
Here.
Richard Marks.
Here.
Ron Singer.
Here.
Don Vogelsberg.
Here.
We begin our council meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I would like to ask Mr. Chuck Miles to please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'm softening up the council for you.
Thank you.
Hey, wait till you hear what he has to say. You'll understand. Item 3A is to recommend the mayor's appointment to the Mental Health Board. That recommendation is Mr. Chuck Miles. All of you should have received an email with Mr. Miles' application. I have had the pleasure of knowing Chuck for many, many years, his good work through AID. The recommendation comes highly recommended from Mr. John Ford, who has served on the Mental Health Board for a number of years. Mr. Miles, would you join us at the podium?
Sure.
Now, here's why I softened up the council. Mr. Miles is a dedicated servant to the Association for Individual Development. He is an all-around good guy. He serves, obviously, without remuneration for doing good for other people. But he's a Packers fan. So I thought this better go to a vote. See? See?
All right.
Hey.
What could you guys possibly have to argue with about after Thursday night? And
I don't get cable.
Five games prior to that.
But. Nay.
There you have it. John, who's second in line? But Chuck is a great guy, and we're delighted that you applied for the opening. So, and John, thank you for the recommendation.
Okay.
Do you want to share a little bit about yourself that you haven't already included on the application?
Well, I did mention that, and I know a few of you, and I have a daughter with intellectual developmental disabilities. A lot of you know Emma. Dawn was her nurse at school for a while, and went to school with a lot of her kids, and Dawn knows Emma very well, and we've had some behavioral health issues with Emma. And I guess when John asked me why I wanted to be on the Mental Health Board, it's I'm fortunate I work for a great company. Work for Caterpillar down in Aurora. I get paid pretty well, and I have great benefits, and so we're able to get Emma the services she needs. My problem is I don't know what happens to people that can't get at those services. And we know some people who child had some behavioral health issues, was not happy with one of the providers, and didn't really have the resources to try to do anything on their own. So. We were able to direct them to the services that AID provides, and we're able to get that person some help. So, you know, I guess this is, and Alderman Dantino mentioned that if we can change one person's life by avoiding a suicide or other issues with serious mental illness, what with the work we do on 708 board and the work we do with AID is all very important. So that's why I'm here. And it's not because I'm a Packer fan.
And Chuck throws a great party, by the way. You do.
Thank you.
If you haven't been to the annual AID benefit dinner, it's hosted by Chuck and his team, and it's a great event that raises money for an extraordinary organization. So, well done. Any comments or questions from Mr. Miles? Dawn.
Well, I was all for this appointment because besides the passion you bring from your personal life, Chuck is also, he sees the whole picture. He's about the good of all. So I think you'll bring a great perspective and have everyone in mind with your decisions. So I couldn't think of a better person.
Okay. Thank you, Don.
Mr. Hill, it's an undecided vote for Mr. Hill, Chuck.
Really?
Yeah, it's a tough gig, man.
Is that insecure?
Well, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Sam played football for the University of Illinois.
Okay.
You know, freshman year only now. Come on.
Freshman year. But
I went to Bradley. We didn't have a football team.
With a young teammate of mine by the name of Nitschke.
Red Grange.
I've heard of him.
Red Grange.
And my dad played with him. But anyway, may I wear my triangular cheesehead hat sometime during a game?
Sure.
Thank you very much. I do have a little loyalty there.
Okay.
A roll call vote is in order this evening. We ask the clerk to please take the roll.
Has there been a motion?
No, so moved.
Moved by Alderman Vogelsberg, seconded by Alderman Dantino. Forgive me. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Donald Cummings.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Congratulations, Chuck.
It's unanimous, kind of like the Packers.
It's
excuse me, can I reverse? Yeah, recall the vote. Can I take my vote back?
Motion, that's in order, absolutely. Congratulations.
Okay.
Well, welcome
Thank
aboard.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Ford
you.
And Mr. Dantino. Item 3B tonight is an important item, to say the least. It's to proclaim September 19th, 2012 as No Text on Board Pledge Day. This is about a pledge we should all take regarding no texting while driving. And I, for one, will accept the pledge, of course. My work with the National Safety Council has shown me through statistics, statistics and anecdotes, sad ones, that texting and driving is indeed not only inappropriate, but it is extraordinarily dangerous. And I think we can all probably attest to the fact that there before the grace of God go we in terms of trying to send an important message when in fact that message can probably wait until we pull over or what have you. So if anybody has any questions, I would entertain a motion to so proclaim the 19th as No Text on Board Day.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Marks, seconded by Hill. Any comments? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Thank you very much. Item 3C. We have some very special guests with us this evening. There's a presentation by the Geneva Electric Division and our friends at Commonwealth Edison regarding electric service. Sylvia, do you want to join us? All of you probably know Sylvia from our years of work with our friends at ComEd. Sylvia was invited this evening by Alderman Singer, myself, Mrs. McKittrick, and others to share with us some information regarding what a lot of people may have thought or continue to think have been some surprisingly frequent power outages, particularly during, you know, golly, it's nice weather and why the heck's the power going out kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Sylvia has brought a team with her. One guy's in a suit, Jose, because clearly you're still on probation. Another dude from Rockford, another guy from Marseilles. So, Sylvia, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'd like to start off by really thanking Mayor Burns and Mary McKittrick and the rest of the council members for asking us to come out and tell you a little bit about what the weather has been causing this past summer at ComEd. It has been another really, really difficult summer. Storms are definitely increasing in their intensity, and as a result, our customers have had to endure some lengthy outages, more outages than we probably would have liked, but these interruptions are unfortunately part of Mother Nature wreaking some havoc in our area. And so I'd like to go through this presentation and just kind of let you know what the months of July and August have been like around here. I'm sure that you can all also provide some stories about what happened in this area as well. Before I start on the storms that we've had, let me take a step back. Let me kind of bring you through what the ComEd storm process is like. And so the ComEd service territory has transmission lines. Of course, those are the great big steel towers that we see scattered throughout the ComEd service territory here in the northern part of Illinois. The transmission lines are the lines that have the highest voltage. And then underneath the transmission, the large transmission lines are the 34 kV lines, which we like to call, it's kind of like a sub-transmission line. The city of Geneva is served by 34 kV lines. There are six 34 kV lines that serve the city of Geneva. And so those 34 kV lines would fall under a transmission line. Again, we refer to them as a subtransmission. When we have a large interruption that comes across our area, their priorities are that we restore at the transmission level, then at the subtransmission level, and then we work down to our 4 and 12 kV system, which are the feeders that are probably very familiar to the City of Geneva Electric operations. And then from there, you work down to devices, transformers, and down to the individual customers. We do take critical facilities into account. Those critical facilities are somewhere in the area when we're restoring those large amounts of blocks of customers on the feeder lines. So we also elevate those as well. So that's how those are the steps that we take to restore service in our area. What were the storms like this past summer? On July 1st, the Commonwealth Edison Territory sustained 380,000 interruptions that customers, 380,000 customers felt the impact of the interruptions from the storms that were on July 1st alone. There are certain designations that we have in order for the ICC to actually classify these as storms. So certainly in between those dates, there were storms that were also affecting pocketed areas throughout the service territory. But these particular four dates are dates that have been signed off as large storms, significant storms that have hit our service territory. The next one came in July. The July storm affected 174,000 customers across the service territory. On July 24th was another huge storm that impacted 300,000 customers across the service territory. And on August 4th, we were dealt another one with over 227,000 customers. There you can see in as little time as 34 days that we have dealt with customers that have experienced an interruption in their electric system, totaling over a million. This has been no exception. We have in the past years also been dealt some heavy blows. A couple of years ago, the Northwest area was hit very, very hard, and we had customers that were out for several days. And so from every one of these devastating storms, we do learn things. We do get better at our response time of how we can analyze some of the damage, how we can deploy people out to the areas. But nonetheless, these are enormous storms that have been dealt to us in the past couple of years. So the July storm alone really kind of nailed in on the central east area of Kane County, on that eastern portion that of course includes the City of Geneva and some of the surrounding communities. From there, it moved into the DuPage County area, where it almost took out almost half of the customers. 45% of customers in DuPage County were affected by that storm alone. We had winds of over 117 miles an hour that were categorized as an F2 tornado. The width of those tornadoes across our area were four F2 tornadoes side by side coming through that area. So clearly you can see that there was some heavy duty devastation that happened in this area. There were hundreds and hundreds of power lines that came down in this area. ComEd responded by sending out 400 crews, and we also brought in additional crews from other states. We brought in our contractors and put them to the task of restoring some of these areas. And in many, many of these areas, it was a matter of rebuilding the system. ComEd also has, from the previous storms, has done some lessons learned. And one of the items that we took to task and have implemented, and we did actually implemented on this past July storm is that there is a joint operations center that that was set up with the DuPage County, which was the area that was the most devastated out of this service territory. And so what basically the Joint Operations Command Center does is it brings local municipalities in to a pre-designated area and ComEd personnel there, and we work hand in hand. We've learned that communications is the key to restore quicker, to get that information across to people, and so that is probably one of our major lessons learned, I would say, from the storms that hit us when it hit the Northwest area. Here are just some pictures of the devastation. So you can clearly see that this is not just a couple of lines that have gone down. These are miles of wires laying down in streets. I don't know how good you can see. These are actually huge 34 kV poles that are just like snapped. Here's a tree that's come down that's laying across our wires. So this was going on all over the service territory. And the difficult part, I think, that sometimes we find is if you do not see the damage clearly in front of you, it's very hard to actually just even have an imagination of what it's going to take to rebuild that system. So those storms hit, it takes down the system. Depending on the time it takes us to analyze what actually takes place and get everything deployed, it's unfortunately one of those situations where it's construction. It's construction that you've got to go out there, get the power lines back up, and in order to get them back up, you got to get a pole out there. You've got to, you know, do emergency Julies, get those poles in the ground, and then have the guys restring the wires. All of that is very time consuming, and it's just been a very devastating July and August for us this year. Here's some additional ones. These are from storms in the August. You can see some of the weather front that came in, as well as some of the devastation in the area. You can see some of the buildings that have sustained damage. Again, just clearly speaking to the damages that were caused by the storms in this area. The August fourth storm alone reported winds of over 75 miles an hour, and there were approximately 50,000 lightning strokes that hit this area. Of the 50,000 strokes that hit the area, more than 28,000 were in this west region. The city of Geneva is served out of the west region, and so clearly the lightning strokes that were in this area were one of the leading causes of damage to some of the feeders. Again, just looking at statistics on the amount of lightning strokes that affected the ComEd service territory. Here's the ComEd hookup for the city of Geneva. The city of Geneva is fed by six 34 kV distribution lines. Four of them come from West Chicago, two of them come from North Aurora. Those distribution lines are like main stems. Again, we refer to those as sub-transmission lines that bring in the power. And so on the 34 kV line system, I thought it would be helpful if you knew how do we maintain our system. ComEd is very, very prudent on the maintenance of our system. Every 2 years, a 34 kV line is inspected. That means that someone will walk down that line, will call out items that have affected it, and then again, those items are further analyzed back with our engineers, and they're put into a queue and scheduled, and the construction group goes out and takes care of those items. So that's every 2 years we have an inspection. We also have thermography that's done. That thermography will identify hot spots on the 34 line because, of course, that equipment, we don't know that it's going bad. We do not have that type of equipment just yet. We are working towards that. with the Energy Infrastructure Modernization Act. There's a lot of things that are going in improving the system. But the thermography is a great way for us to identify any type of hotspots that that are along these feeders. And then, of course, it's the trimming that people either love it or hate it. Unfortunately, we have a lot of trees in the area, and the Illinois Commerce Commission holds us to a pretty strict standard that we maintain those lines. And so every 4 years, we trim those specific lines, and we trim them to a certain amount. And it's really based on the type of tree it is, the area that is around it, the overhang. But that's a 34 kV line that is inspected every 4 years. And every 2 years, we actually come back and we'll also go back. And again, as I referred to some of these species of trees that grow faster, we go back and we will do spot trimming on those trees. So that kind of really encompasses some of the maintenance that we do on our 34 lines. It is very very rigorous, and we have to report out to the ICC when we are done with all of our work. So there is oversight on it. That's really basically how the ComEd system works and feeds into the City of Geneva 34 kV line. From these past storms, I will tell you that although in the past we have always worked very, very well with the City of Geneva, and the City of Geneva has an account manager and myself that we can constantly, you know, kind of exchange information. We're here to support you. I think that in every instance, as I said, there's always lessons to be learned. We have some follow-up items that we're going to go back, sit down, and kind of toss around and see where we can improve some of those items and how we can work to be better aligned with the City of Geneva and address some of their needs. So that's all I have for you. I am open to questions, or I certainly can talk to you after the meeting, whichever you prefer.
I had a question.
Do we want to hear from Mr. Dinges' and Mr. Buffington's presentation first, or do you want to reserve questions for Sylvia right now? Dan, I'll defer to you. Do you want to go ahead and present some information?
I'll get through our presentation, and we can open
it. Got it. Sylvia, could you do me the pleasure and honor of introducing the team that's joined you this evening as well, just so our council is aware?
Absolutely. So
with the hitters that have been brought up.
So with me tonight is my regional director, Jose Andrade. And I have two reliability engineers with me, Tony Clapp and Jerry Parch. And these reliability engineers are the gentlemen that kind of do the deep down dive and kind of look through that stuff, and are kind of the gurus of it. So.
Got it. Welcome, gentlemen. Mr. Dinges, Mr. Buffington, the floor is yours.
Get over
here. Hi, I'm Mike Buffington, Superintendent of Electric Services at Geneva, and I'd like to say ditto, and I'm done. But what I'd like us to do is take you through, and I'd like to look at what you tell us. What is your directive as a city council you want us to do? I'll take a look at our electric system just like theirs, but on a smaller scale. They look at the macro of the system. We're just the micro within that system. I'm going to look at the budget and what drives the budget, and what I come to you every year under directions of Mary and Dan, what we come back to you with. We're going to look at system restoration, or better yet, how do we minimize these outages and how do we get them restored as quickly as possible, at least people affected. And then we're going to look at the outages Sylvia talked about in July 1st and August 4th, and how within Geneva we struggled with these outages and tried to bring the system back on. You give us direction. Your strategic plan says maintain cost-effective and efficient delivery of city services. We're looking at the reliability part of our services. Under the direction of Mary and Dan, we look at a balance. That balance is outages versus the rates. or outages versus the cost, depending on how you want to look at it. And to any customer, and I am one of my own customers, any outage is unacceptable, but is that practical? We have 9 substations within Geneva, and I'll show you a picture a little later on. The substations in our system are the heart of our systems. There are 387 circuit miles of electricity within our 8-square-mile city. It feeds over 1,600 transformers for our residential, commercial, industrial customers. There's 266 switches. What happens within our system, depending upon the loads? We had over 100 degrees this summer. Depending on construction, depending on outages, we're able to reconfigure this system to bring our customers back on or maintain our services while we work on the system. That's over 10,000 meters. Our capital program is over $2 million a year just for reliability. It's for replacement overhead, underground services, and to rehab and recondition our substations. What drives this are outages. You get an outage report quarterly. In this outage report, we look at such things as supply. That's ComEd. We partner with ComEd during outages. We need to know what's going on with them so we can bring you back on. Can we bring you back on by switching our system faster than they can? It takes time. We look at animals. We average about 4 animals a year causing outages. And right now we think we got the squirrels under semi-control until the next super squirrel comes out and figures a way around our system. We look at trees. They talk about tree trimming. We spend $100,000 a year, and our system's based on 4 different cycles within the overhead area that we spend on tree trimming alone. And this year, what I heard from my customers and your residents, what they said was, don't tree trim so much. You cut all the ash trees down, now it looks bad.
What?
She's got
Doc Salter.
You didn't do very well at that. You missed about 5 times.
I got it.
I know.
Our ongoing system maintenance, we spend approximately $3.4 million a year in expenses, and that includes administration and billing, just to keep the system on. We have 14 people in the electric division, 9 of them are linemen. The other 5 are support so that they can do their work. And then we have engineers, we have myself, we have support staff. That's down by 4 in the last 7 years because we followed your directive. We took a look at replacing ComEd. 1971, you passed an ordinance that said any new subdivisions will be done by the person doing the subdivision, and it will be underground. And we've carried that forward. And what we said is on the 34-5, you don't want, if we were going to replace ComEd, you do not want more wires in the air. So we said put it underground. To do that, it would cost $45 million. We had 2 major outages this year, 1 for 4 hours, half the city, 1 for 5. Is that worth $45 million in your rates? When I talk about electric system restoration, I also have to talk about how do we minimize outages and how do we look at it. The first thing we look at is safety. If there is an outage, we have to look at safety for the residents, and we have to look at safety for the guy who works on it, our lineman. If a wire is on the ground, we cannot guarantee it's dead. I can tell you I would hope it's dead, but I have seen wires sit on the ground and stay energized. You don't get second chances with electric, either maimed or dead. We tried to minimize the size of the outage. We did a study about 5 years ago, and in that study, what we took a look at is what our customers wanted. We have many people who work in our homes and do their business out of their homes. Even a flicker on those homes disrupts their businesses. It disrupts commercial. It disrupts industrial, where an industrial customer costs them $20,000 to get back online to clean their system up. And so what we did was we took a look at our system, and it works something like this. If there's an outage from ComEd or on our substation, we have a large area out. If there's an outage on a feeder, and a feeder is a line going from substation to another substation, we blink it once. The majority of the outages are on the circuits going into the residential. And if we have an outage down there, we just shut it off. The rest of the system does not see it. So we've ended most of the blinks within the system. We've helped our customers. For restoration time, what we've done is we standardize on equipment. We got $1.2 million worth of inventory. 70% of that is for outages. And most of that is for transformers, wires, and switches. A minimum lead time today is 12 weeks. We cannot have customers out for 12 weeks. We took a look at how to restore the customers. And if we have an outage on a substation, whether it's ComEd or our own substation failure, how can we bring up large chunks of the city? As we're doing the subdivision rebuild, we have these feeder circuits that feed them. And we have been increasing and the size and the capacity of those secrets so that when we bring up a system, we can bring it up all at once. And I will show you how that's done in the maps. We train our employees 3 to 4 hours a month in safety and new equipment, all for the restoration and the work on your lines. I have a map up there, and the map shows you the red dots are substations. We have four substations on the west side of the river. There are two redundant safe stations, two at Eastside Drive and two at Business Park. The rest of the stations, I have a station at Western, Peyton, behind Public Works, over at Delanor, and at Kesslinger. The orange up there is the overhead. That's what we trim. If there is a storm that comes through Geneva, those people get hit first, not the underground. These people say, whether or not ComEd shuts us off or not, we have tree damage, we have limbs down in this area. Now I'd like to go to the July 1st outage. And I kind of like this outage because I lived it. At noon, we had a storm come through. And Sylvia talked about over 300,000 people out. That storm came through. And what I saw at that storm was I lost the substation of the ComEd feed going to Eastside Drive. I have about 700, 800 customers out. At the same time, PD started getting phone calls. And they filter these phone calls for me. They get hundreds of phone calls. And they filtered it down to 29 or 30 phone calls that I need to send people out to look at. I called ComEd up, took a look at the outage on our SCADA system, got their permission, and re-energized that line by switching over to a separate ComEd feed. 19 minutes. We organized our crews, and we took a look at what we had to do. The first thing we had to do is go meet the demands of the fire department. The fire department are the first responders. They get out there and they find the wires are down. You call in and tell me what's going on with the system. You'll say, I hear a big boom. I live at such and such. I have a tree limb out there. I live at such and such. I have a pole broke. I live at such and such. That's how we find our outages. And what happens out of these hundreds of calls, whether it's through PD during the working hours on an outage or at the Public Works, they filter those calls down, and then I take what they give me, which was about 30 calls, and I look and see how they fit into the system. And I got it down to 12 different areas of problems. And I put my crews out there. I'd already turned the system on there. We started restoration. And I said, good, I'm going home. I get a phone call. I got a wire down from Peyton. Wow. If I know it's down there, it's not Geneva's wire. It's got to be ComEd's. I go back in. This is what I found. Half of Geneva's down. That blows my mind. I'm telling you. I go, oh. And I was stymied. And I pick up the phone and call ComEd. They're being inundated with phone calls. And it was a struggle. It was definitely a struggle. I had crews out there repairing things. One of the first things I did during the outage is I contacted Dan. I got to get a hold of somebody to find out whether or not I can bring extra people in. What do I need to do? How do I need to get the information out to you and your residents so that you know what's going on? Is Geneva taking care of it? I have no idea. What we did, it took us 2 hours, and what we did, ComEd brought up two substations. And when ComEd says they have facilities that are on priority, we have facilities that are on priority. Those facilities are the hospital, the water, and the sewer. They brought up half the system. I had extra help coming in at that time. We brought up the hospital, and that's done by manual switching, and we brought up the other side of State Street. And we did that, and ComEd finally restored power after 4.5 hours. Let's take the next look at the next outage. That's only 277 ComEd customers. And when I called them, they said that outage stretched from Wisconsin clear down to Kankakee. Same outage almost. There's a slight difference in this outage is because of the hot weather, we had to balance the system out. So we had a little more of State Street onto the southeast substation. And if you'll notice, remember going back a couple slides, we picked that up during the outage. We had no outage over here at Eastside Drive, so I had substation capability. And what I did is I picked up west of the river right there using South Street. And I talked to you about changing the capacity of the wires as we go, the feeders. That's the ability it gives us. We can pick up bigger pieces. We don't have to use it often, but when we use it, it does the job. Then we slipped over and picked up the hospital. That outage was 5 hours and 18 minutes for most of my customers. What's the life of an outage? To summarize, all outages are different. I just showed you two of them. But when I get a phone call in the middle of the night, I have to have the girls at PD tell me what's going on. And they'll say something like, I have one customer with half power. I know how to handle that. I got a couple of linemen to go out and take care of it. I'm getting about 4-7 phone calls. I know how to handle that. I got a couple of linemen to take care of it. I'm getting hundreds of calls. Oh my God, I got to go in. Do we need extra people? It takes, on average, to get two linemen in there from that initial call from PD, a half an hour. If there's wires on the ground, we got the fire department out there. We're the first responders, and they protect those wires. And if it's too, it takes too long to get all the way around there, they bring ESDA in to support them. We evaluate the conditions. How large is it? What kind of resources? You can't always count on having all your linemen in because everybody takes vacation sometimes, and sometimes you end up short. We have agreements with the other communities to use their people if we need to. but they usually can't get him in till the next day, if we can get them in at all, because we're all regional. If there's an outage, they are also affected. Communications. I need to get a hold of Dan. I need to get the communications out. What's going on? What do your people need to know? What do your residents need to know? What do you need to know? You set your priorities. I'm telling you, during these big outages, for the first, it takes half hour to get in there. For the first hour, maybe the first hour and a half, 2 hours, all we do is run around and clear the system up to make it safe before we start restoring any power, just to make it safe. And what about ongoing repairs? I haven't remembered one for the last 5 years, but we had one where we had straight line winds that started up by Sandholm and came straight across the river. Took out both sides of the river where we had overhead. There were outages out there for 20 hours for that restoration, and we brought in Naperville because we have an agreement with them. That's more or less how Geneva handles it, more or less our experience. Are there any questions?
I'm sure there are lots of questions. I have a couple, if I may begin. No one objects. You referenced that the safest thing to do, based on standards and obviously the safety of the residents and your team, is to make certain it's safe to bring the power back on. What is the risk of not making sure it's safe to bring the power back on? Are we talking explosion in substations? Are we talking explosion in transformers? Are we talking more damage to the lines?
The first thing is we're talking about people being hurt.
Got it.
That is the first thing. And if you don't make it safe, there's a very good possibility you create more damage within your equipment and extend the outage.
Okay. It also should be noted that you have the capacity to monitor the SCADA system from your home. Correct? Or incorrect?
If he has power.
Yeah, true.
I prefer to come in.
Okay, but you do have that ability.
We do have that ability.
And for what it's worth, for those watching, you are a resident of Geneva, so when the power impacts your neighborhood, you're impacted directly.
Right.
Which is the reason why you flee home, probably.
Right.
You mentioned that the capacity of wires, we are improving the capacity of wires. Does that mean 12 kV to 34?
No.
Or does that mean redundancy?
What it means is increasing the size of the wire, 12 kV wire, so instead of carrying 100 amps,
okay,
it's carrying 480 amps.
Got it. Okay. Thanks. Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You touched upon it, but I would like to... I get a lot of complaints from my house because my husband works on computers, right? So anytime there's a half power, I think that's what you mean by a brownout. Is that what it is? It's kind of like this low kind of decrease in power that happens, and it's not during a storm necessarily. So how are we working on improving that, I guess?
I'm not aware of any that are occurring right now, but I have been aware of some, and some of the what you're talking about has been caused by switching of capacitors. The capacitors come on and off. Some of that is caused by outages that are not on that line, but it would break the whole system down.
Okay.
But I'm not aware of any going on.
Well, some of them, some they occur occasionally, and he says that's the worst thing that could possibly have. It's much better to just go down hard and come up than to have that, you know, that limbo kind of electricity.
Low,
yeah, that low voltage electricity occurring. He always feels that if there was something that we could do or look at, that's...
If I know when it's occurring, then I can tie it to an instance and then we can look at correcting it.
Okay. I can keep track of that, that's for sure. What happens when there is no storm, and I think the mayor touched upon it, when there is no storm, but yet we have an outage that occurs, is that because you're fixing the equipment that may have happened during this storm, or?
A couple examples. First thing, during a storm, there's damages that occur. A lightning will hit a line. That line may not fail, at that time. It may just hang there and fail later. We had a failure at Randall and Williams here last few weeks.
Yep, we experienced
that. That switch was 3 years old. We just rebuilt that. We're bringing in the manufacturer to take a look at it and see. What we found out is they don't make the switch anymore, but still after 3 years, there should be some sort of warranty on that. When we looked at the switch, there seemed to be some corrosion in there. We don't know if that's original or that's something caused by the salt. We do bid these systems out. We do a spec, and that's spec on the best engineering reliability prudence that we can come up with. And we bid it out, and we take the lowest bidder based on your directions. I cannot say that caused that problem, but that was the lowest switch, and nobody sells it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Also, you mentioned that in the past years, I guess we decreased our amount of employees. Did we decrease the number of linemen?
Yes.
Okay.
We decreased it by two.
We decreased it by two.
Yes.
And do you think that increasing that number would cause our electric outages to be less?
I did not mention it. Your capital budgeting program allowed us to go from putting out fires that we've been doing for years to maintaining the system. And we're able to reduce them because we're not running around putting out fires
okay.
all the time.
Thank you.
Alderman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your presentation to me indicated that your first indication of an outage comes from a phone call. I was under the impression that you get an indication in your SCADA system if some major fraction of the city drops out for some reason. You get it independent of people calling you.
I get a text message or a email on my phone, along with all the others that I get. Telling me there's an outage.
Well, the reason I ask is simply I'll have a neighbor, you know, run over and say, you know, the whole street's out. As a matter of fact, three or four streets out. Are you going to phone the electric department or should I? And I usually say, well, if three or four or five blocks are out, they certainly know about it. Is that true?
No, that may not be true.
It may not be true.
That may not
so
be
it
true.
Is important for people to call.
You remember, I told you the way we've set the system up is if it's a feeder, I don't know about a feeder working because I get a message. It's from the SCADA system. But if it's out here, that's 27 customers, and we've isolated an underground system that's failed, I don't know it until you call.
Your system doesn't have enough measuring capability to know when it's dropped for 4% of the customers.
No, it does not.
It should. Should it not?
We have.
Is that something in the future for a future version of a SCADA system?
I haven't seen any trending yet that it tells me reliability that we have that type of information because our swings when our customers get home at 5 o'clock and when they go to bed is quite a large.
The swings don't happen in a second. If you lost 27 customers in a second, it's hard to believe that everybody switched on their dish dryer at the mm-hmm. same, their dishwasher at the same time. It would seem to me that a system that one can conceptualize, I have no idea whether it makes any sense financially, but a system one could conceptualize could see instant changes in power drain in the system in various sections so that something like three or four blocks, which is probably 100 customers, you would have instant notification that something happened. You had a 200 or 300 amp instantaneous change.
There are systems out there in metering that'll do it for us, but we have not looked at that yet.
To change the subject, do we have enough interconnections so that clearly in a grid system, if some part of the grid goes down, you can resolve it by interconnecting other parts of the grid to the extent that you have interconnections? And I realize once you get out into the last transformer, which serves half a dozen homes, you can't do that. But at the level of blocks and districts, do we have enough interconnections so that you can switch loads?
I have enough interconnections on the hottest day this summer that if I lost one substation, that I could pick it up.
But two, you can't just because of total load.
It depends on where they're located.
Could we use more interconnections? Would the system be more robust?
As we rebuild, we look at these alternatives and we add them where we believe it's prudent.
So So we do have in our plans to continuously look at the question of whether any given outage might have been helped if there was this, some interconnection that you didn't have at the time.
That is correct.
And that's part of the capital program, I presume.
That is correct.
Well, this is the third question is one that I wanted to ask you, and I also want to ask the representatives from ComEd here, which is simply that most people in meteorology and climate science believe that the severity and the number of severe weather events is not going to go down. If anything, it's probably going to go up. So are there long-term suggestions or long-term ideas in terms of long-term planning that would allow us to continue to respond at least at the level we currently do if the number of severe weather events actually increases? What could we visualize? What could we visualize in terms of, say, a SCADA system that could monitor all the subsections of the city with high precision? What could you visualize that would help maintain your current level in the face of increasing severity of storms?
To be honest with you, I haven't visualized that for the simple cost of it.
Well, it's a cost-benefit analysis like everything else.
It's a cost-benefit, and we have outages versus cost, and that's one of the first things I pointed out. Goes back to eliminating ComEd. We have two outages.
The same question applies to them, so you get first shot at the question.
Yeah, and I'm leading to them. Two outages, 1 4-hour and 1 5-hour. Is that worth $45 million to you in the increase of the rates?
Alderman Brown brings up an interesting issue perhaps Sylvia and the team could address. Are you referring, Chuck, to the overall principle of the smart grid that was talked about recently?
Yeah.
That's one aspect of it. Right, certainly. Okay. I mean, what's been presented today is an incredibly well thought out, incredibly efficient system of responding to the level of disasters we're currently seeing. But as I say, there's a number of very knowledgeable people who say that's likely to increase in the future. So today's level of response may not be adequate 10 to 20 years from now. And there has to be some thought about the right direction to go in to respond to increasing severity and frequency of weather events.
Given the change in technology, I do agree with you that 20 years from now, it may not be the right thing. It may increase. I agree with that.
Well, what you're doing will be the right thing, but it may not be enough.
Right.
Yes. Would you? Sure. I invite you to respond to my rather leading question.
Mayor Byrne is correct. ComEd, the storms are definitely increasing in intensity. We recently passed legislation. It's the Energy Infrastructure Modernization Act. Over the next 5 years, we have front-loaded it so that we are rebuilding a lot of our infrastructure. I will tell you the magnitude of this past storm, though, on some of these. We had well over 175 feeder lockouts. It's a tremendous amount.
And that lockout's part of the design. They lock out intentionally to provide or prevent a greater disaster.
Exactly. I mean, I think just as Mike was referring to, when you have a system that comes down, you have to always maintain the protection of that system. Because if you try to do something, you know, quickly or switch it over or overload it, you will wind up with a much more larger problem. I mean, you'll have damaged your system.
All remember the domino effects that occurred on the East Coast
exactly.
30 years ago
exactly.
and the
Very
Midwest
much
10
so.
Years
right.
ago.
So it's equivalent to Chuck and I are playing basketball, and Chuck goes down with a sprained ankle. The advice is stay put as opposed to get up and he breaks the damn thing.
Right. Right, basically.
Chuck, you and I are playing basketball next week, by the way.
But the other thing is actually the smart meters. Smart meters will be deployed. We believe they're going to be starting next year. There will be over 4 million of them installed. That is a 10-year program. We have a pilot program that's going that we did on the near western suburbs that and part of the city of Chicago that was 130,000 meters. But the smart meters are really, I was just saying to Jose, it's funny, a lot of the items that are coming up, it's the same thing, but on a much larger scale for us. No, if your power goes out, we don't automatically know. We say to customers, pick up the phone, send us an email. We have two-way texting that's available to our customers. Those are all newer things that we've come up with because of the intensity of the previous storms.
Right. Well,
so two-way texting is huge. You know, there's just other avenues to get the word to us,
but
because we automatically don't know.
Within my professional lifetime, there's been major advances, like you now have switches that can respond in a fraction of a cycle. They can actually respond to one or two cycles of lost current. I would expect that those, in modern Wi-Fi terms, communicate instantly back to somebody that, hey, I just had to switch out.
Sure.
Is that true?
Never today? Instantly to the point that you don't see a blink.
No, I understand.
You know, when you see that blink, it's actually working in
our world. It's even possible if you have, you know, the right backups, et cetera, which places like hospital do, to actually respond within one cycle. Very expensive. But I would expect that those very smart modern switches, which we see switching out on one cycle and then waiting 3 seconds and trying to reconnect, et cetera, would be instantly sending you messages saying, hey, I'm responding to an emergency. You ought to know about it.
But those automated switches are connected to a larger block of customers. It is not something that you would automatically see.
Do they respond? I'm hearing that it's not true, that phone calls are important and they're necessary.
Phone calls are very important.
I could envision a system where the phone call is not necessary. Your system knows about it before I even notice, before
I
hear my
computer
turning off in the other room.
Yeah, and those are smart meters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when the smart meters come, you won't have to call us. We'll actually know that because that meter sends out kind of a last breath letting you know that the power is going down.
I'm wondering, like at 3 in the morning when the storm comes through, when you put the covers over your head, and you don't notice the power's out until you wake up at 7 and notice your clock has stopped working.
But smart meters don't work by themselves. There's a whole interconnection system that has to be put together in order just, you know, to get that full, you know, complement.
So what else is ComEd going to do to make sure that this is better 10 years from today than it is today?
Well,
not that we respond better. You're doing a magnificent job at that. You know, this is triage. But in preventing, I mean, we'd like to not have to do a triage, right? It would be so much nicer if these lines could immediately switch themselves out and be replaced by a redundancy of a very robust grid.
And so the smart grid that we're putting in, we're feeling that is going to help the system tremendously. Are there new ways that are constantly, that are out there? Yes, so I don't know what's going to be out there in 5 years or in 10 years, as we're saying, you know, something that's gonna be 5, 10, 20 years down the line. We spend a significant amount every year on our system and on capital improvements. And so, yeah, that is something that as a company, we are constantly looking for.
Well, I asked the question in a local way to Mike. I mean, it appears we have some redundancy on the east side in that we have, four lines and four substations. It's a redundancy we don't actually have as much of on the west side. Given the amount of money, could you actually improve the redundancy on the west side?
Given an amount of money, I can do anything. The substations are $3 to $4 million apiece. Generally, we bond for them. Again, that affects your rates.
Why do we have that on the east side, not the west side? Is that just historical development, the way it worked?
I believe that's historical development, the way it worked.
We first only had lines from the east, correct? Many years ago.
I can't. That's before my time.
Alderman Brown?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Singer?
Thank you. One of the concerns I have, this is directed more at the ComEd people, I suspect. I'll be with you in a moment, Michael. You may sit down.
Always the teacher.
You contend that you're expending considerable sums of money in improving the grids as such. My fear is as such that those expenditures are being directed in other areas. How much of that expenditure is being directed towards our needs in this immediate area?
And so when you look at our system improvements, circuits and feeders are not compartmentalized in municipal boundaries. Circuits run for miles. So I cannot specifically say to you that, you know, that there's X amount that is being spent specifically for you. We look at it system-wide. It's a holistic approach to our entire grid system because, just as Mike referred to, because something happens here, those lines are connected, and there can be certainly something that shows up, you know, miles away. So the system is interconnected, and we just don't compartmentalize it to that point.
Okay. You indicated early in your presentation, you presented those four, there were four steps, I believe, or were there five steps?
Four.
Four steps. Step number one, essentially, is that takes precedent over any of the other steps? Is
correct.
That how you function?
Correct. So that would be at the transmission line, yeah, at the 138 kV and above. So those are the huge towers.
Correct.
So those are the, you know, that's the be all.
Right. Okay. You also indicated that, did you say there were six 34 K lines coming into our community?
34 KV lines serve the city.
Chicago, two from Aurora?
North Aurora.
Or North Aurora. So apparently then, there are times in which people have questioned me as to when we have a power outage that might be rather severe or whatever. They'll say to me, why is it I called my grandmother in Batavia and they have electricity, but we don't, or shall we say St. Charles has what electricity, but we don't. Is it because it's these lines that are being affected, or there are branches of those lines and there are not? What's the answer to that question?
It could be. So the city of Batavia is served by a 138 KV system. Yeah. So I would not know how to speak to that. We would have to ask Batavia. The city of St. Charles has 34 KV lines.
Right.
As well.
Okay. All right. I guess that's all I have for you.
All righty.
Michael. You said we have 387 miles of line. How much of that is underground?
If you looked at my map originally, you will look at it. It's got 40 or 50% above, in geographic area above ground. Of that, if I look at just the circuit wires, the miles in circuit wires, I have about 70% underground and 30% above ground. And a lot of that's due because when you have an outage on underground, you want backup and you want looped in there. So that if I have an outage, if it's underground, it takes longer to find, it takes longer to fix. And so we isolate it and bring in it from different directions.
I was a little taken by one of your marks regarding some equipment that had only been in effect for a matter of switch of some nature has only been 2 or 3 years old and all of a sudden it became obsolete. You indicated to us that you have surplus equipment sitting out there in your yard, which is a considerable amount of money invested. What assurance do we have that that equipment won't or isn't at this present time obsolete?
When we set up the specs, we set them up for different types of switches. We have an air switch, and it just means that's how it disconnects, and we have gas switches and so forth. The general switches are interchangeable. Mm-hmm. That's the backup. And generally what we do is we use out of the yard and replace with a new switch so that the yard's always holding the new switch.
I've been in the Public Works Department a considerable number of times. I've always been somewhat entertained by the things that go on there and very pleased with the way people there function and do and handle their responsibilities. I have to admire your people as well as all the others that do work there. I've often seen in this very locked room this big panel that's out there. What's the reason all these different lights blinking off and on or staying on? Is that have something to do with the power that's being exerted?
The map that shows the substations.
That big board?
Yeah.
We're talking about in the foreman's room.
Yes.
We have a circuit map.
That's right.
Okay. If there is an outage, and that's a major outage, that's where we live. That's where we sit in there and talk to our people, talk to ComEd, and look at the SCADA and work an outage. That helps us keep track of the outages. Not only do we have a big board that shows the major feeder circuits, you remember I talked about the circuits that goes between the subs, but it's also on the other wall is a board showing the individual circuits so we can see how the localized outages go. And we basically manually change the pins and so forth so that we can keep track of what's open and what's not. And it's a lifesaver.
It is. But how come that doesn't, in a sense, help to expedite the means of being able to once again bring power back onto our system?
It does, just because it's a map and we know what all the switches are doing. But it doesn't do anything more than we change it physically.
Ah, okay. All right. I may have another question or two. I'll give the floor over to someone else. Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Back to that board, but it's not the fingers that you can see, right? It's kind of like the arms that you can see. Is that
I
how
have
we
two
can
boards.
Explain
it? I have two boards. I have one showing the feeders, and then I have one on the opposite wall.
Yeah, but not showing the actual residence or that.
It shows the home.
Okay.
It shows the home. I can go up there and find the address of your home on there. And it's not a special color either.
Okay. you mentioned, and this is where it's confusing, and I think that anybody who is listening, this is what came to my mind. During a storm, if we have 70% of the electricity underground and only 30% above ground, it seems that we would have less outages because of that, but it's not necessarily the case, correct? Because we have to rely on ComEd to bring in their power to us, and sometimes that power is cut off. Is that kind of what I'm envisioning, or?
Yes and no. Okay. Each outage is different. 2 years ago, we had rainstorms in here that were dropping, you know, like 7 inches of rain an hour. We had areas that were flooding that never flooded before, and we had outages. Okay. And we've tried to correct those areas since. Anytime you have a major storm coming through and it takes down those lines in that 40% area, those people are out of lights.
Okay.
The advantage of the underground is they do not see the storm. If our substation stays up and ComEd stays up, they
and
don't see the
storm. And those 70% are in good shape.
Right. But that's not 70% of customers, more like 55% of customers.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Alderman Brown.
Thank you. One last question. A number of years ago now, I can't remember how many, unfortunately, there was a big political hot potato in the Tri-Cities area about a power line, a major transmission line down Randall Road. Has that been replaced by something further west?
No.
Would that have helped? Could that help if it was put in?
I don't know. I honestly don't.
This would give us a connection to the north, I presume.
What it was
to come from.
What it was 138 kV line. It would have taken us off the ComEd system. Would that have helped? I envision it would, but I honestly can't answer that question.
Who was proposing that? The Tri-Cities or ComEd?
It was a Commonwealth Edison originally, as you'll all recall, recommended enhancing the 34 kV line on Peck Road.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because all, you know, what broke loose, it was directed that then we can not only increase redundancy, perhaps reliability, how about a 3-mile link on Randall Road? All, you know, what broke loose as well. So the direction was we would enhance our 34 kV, 12 kV, 4 kV accordingly and forego that installment. Much to the chagrin of many members of the county board and others, but you're right, there has been no such improvement made further west of town.
But we are getting power in from the west.
We're getting power in from West Chicago, yes.
No, I meant from the west. What drives the substation on Kesslinger?
North Aurora. Not from ComEd, from the west. We're getting it from Aurora, North Aurora, and East Chicago.
South and the east.
So we have no ComEd line coming in from the west?
Not to my knowledge.
Is there any plan in the future? That would give us a further redundancy, I presume.
Commonwealth Edison's position, which I think I'm stating correctly, was we'd be happy to build a 138 kV, but you're going to be responsible for bringing that line to your service area. So the cost of building those 34 kV and other transmission lines was virtually prohibitive. The estimated cost we had on Randall Road was approximately $3 million a mile, $9 million investment just on Randall Road.
And since we had that political hot potato, there has been a huge growth of the population west of Randall Road. So I'm wondering, how is the system taking that into account, and is it doing it in a way that will improve our redundancy, which it could conceptually?
I cannot answer that. That would have to be ComEd.
Anybody there have a king? We're asking about a very small part of your very large system.
So if there is a need and there is a shortage of supply, that would be, so we have an area where we have capacity engineers that review that system, but you will also know that the economic downturn in the past few years, there really has not been that amount of growth that you would, that would dictate capacity improvement.
Well, let's see. This issue came up.
It was 2005, 2006.
5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah.
More than that, I thought.
Yeah, about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
But certainly since that time, there has been a large growth west of Randall. No. Places like Sugar Grove are just mushrooming still today. But certainly Elburn and Fox have grown considerably since that argument took place.
But again, so we have a capacity engineers that review that system and also look to the future to see what would be coming in. And at this time, there hasn't been a reason for that capacity expansion. And Dan is right. I mean, Batavia did the 138, and so that there's a lot there behind it, so.
Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mayor. I just had a little practical comment about the brownouts, because I was having a lot of brownouts at my house. It's probably the same age as your house. I work from home. I was freaking out. But I never asked the neighbors if it was happening to them. I just assumed it was. But when I finally brought it up, it wasn't happening to them. And I tried everything, unplugging different, you know, just whatever I could do. But it turns out I was having brownouts because the load in my own house was unbalanced. So I had to get a bigger circuit box because I had too, because when they built the house, they, too many blow dryers. No, and it was worse. It was happening when I was home alone. So that was the worst thing. It wasn't even the dang kids. But anyhow, so we upgraded to get a bigger box so we could balance the circuits better, and now we haven't had brownout. So
I
just
think you got
think
a bigger
about.
Box, but I'm going to have to investigate that. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Excuse me. Go ahead, Mr. Culp.
No, Sylvia. I had a question. At the conclusion of your remarks, you said something to the effect that there were a lot of lessons learned this summer from the outages. What would be a couple of examples of what's been learned that will make for a brighter future?
Sure. And so the lessons learned that I was referring to were from the storms that we had the previous year, where the Northwest area was hit and we had folks that were out for several days. We have done better communications on our call center system to get calls in, two-way texting. We have a new ComEd outage map that we offer customers in our service territory to kind of delve down and see where the outages are occurring in their area. We have improved communications with this joint operations center that we're partnering with municipalities, that we have customers that we serve on identifying, you know, priorities. Some of the items that we had learned were, so in the ComEd electrical system, you know, we will look and see, and we have a protocol that we restore. Well, sometimes, you know what, we don't take into account that there is a major thoroughfare that is wreaking havoc for a community because it's been out for 2 days, 3 days because of this major devastation. And so it's an open communication for us to say, hey, we've got to do something to, you know, either, you know, get it over to IDOT, get a battery backup there, get something so that, you know, maybe we can't restore in that entire area just yet, but something that we've got to do for that particular intersection. So things like that are some of the lessons we learned from last year's storms that we've implemented on this year's storms. And so, and we usually continue to identify, you know, items that come up and work to work through those. And so, actually, Mike Buffington and myself and Mike Staples, the account manager for the area, will sit down and kind of do a further scrub and deep down analysis and see what else we can come up with that, you know, might address some of those.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
While you're there, may I ask one? You
sure.
Mentioned the Illinois legislature passed a bill to improve the grid. How does that help you, and what sorts of money? What I understand is what they gave you permission to raise your rates a certain amount in order to cover improvements to the grid. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you're now planning or beginning to construct those?
So right now we have already started. That Energy Infrastructure Modernization Act, it was a two-part legislation. One was for specifically improving the system by accelerating some of the undergrounding that we're doing by doing some storm hardening in some situations with spacer cable installation. In some instances where changing out poles, so there was a specific dollar tied to that. And the other portion of that legislation was for the deployment of the automated devices and then eventually up to the smart meter rollout.
And the way our customers in Geneva see that is a certain portion of our electric bill has to do with the transmission charges from Con Ed, and that went up. Is that correct, Mike?
That's on the transmission. So the Energy Infrastructure Modernization Act is for the distribution system.
So that does not flow through in some indirect way to the bills that our customers see in Geneva? It must.
No.
I can't believe it doesn't.
No.
We negotiated down a one-on-one with Con Ed and Network 5 years ago.
The city of Geneva is a wholesale customer.
Thank you. That's good news.
Okay.
I guess.
All right.
Although I'm all in favor of doing the upgrades.
Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I got one more question, and I think it's more directed to Mr. Buffington. Are we restrained by cost prohibitiveness to notify a customer if perchance you're doing, you know, you're going to anticipate changing over a switch or whatever the case may be, notify those group of homes or residents via some way, Twitter or whatever case they are, before you do the actual switchover or the repair of, say, the one that you mentioned on Williamsburg, and I can't remember if it was State or Randall. I couldn't remember where you made that modification just recently.
That caused an outage.
Oh, and that caused an outage. Okay.
Right. If we have an outage, or we change out meters on a wholesale basis, or we need to change out a transformer affecting customers, we'll leave door tags, or we'll let them know.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's good. But I thought maybe there was some other electronic way that we could do it so that it wouldn't be as.
We don't have everybody's address or address tied to a.
And I'm sure
address.
That would be a security or a privacy issue or something. I'm sure we.
Dorothy,
get into
are you referring to glitches?
Well, no. I'm talking about repairs.
Dependent.
No, the glitches would not be but
glitches like, depend on exactly where you are with respect to the glitch and exactly how sensitive your household equipment is. Some computers will trip on a glitch one day and they won't trip the next day because the glitch was a little smaller.
I was just saying that if there was a repair or a some sort of a switchover or something, because I remember Mr. Buffington mentioning that he did something on Williamsburg because of the fact that it wasn't something happened to that line or something, as I understood it. So I thought you were doing a repair, but it actually caused the problem. So
it caused the problem.
If you sign up for the city Twitter, that kind of stuff goes out all the time.
That's
lane
what I was
closures,
but
there's going to be a bike race.
Right, but I don't know if they do that when they're doing any type of repair, if there was a repair that they were going to schedule. That's all I was.
Mike, glitches do bother people because people, a lot of people still have older equipment of various kinds, clock radios, et cetera, that will trip on a glitch. What is this? What is the most common cause of a glitch? You know, you see the lights flicker, and every once in a while your computer will drop out, and you have to go and turn it back on again. Unless you're on a quiet power source.
Usually glitches are caused by some outage on some other part of the line.
Somewhere else, and it just feeds through. As the switches switch in and out, you just see it as a glitch.
Right.
And it depends on exactly where you are in the system and exactly how sensitive your equipment is.
That's correct.
Because they are very annoying to people. Yeah. The light comes back on in half a second, and but unfortunately, they've lost their microwave and their clock radio and their computer.
Mr. Singer, then Mrs. McKittrick has a comment to add.
Yeah, thank you. Michael, one certainly could understand to restore power to Delmore as quickly as one might be able to, but I've been somewhat under the impression that Delmore is self-sufficient in generating some of its powers. Is that just for emergency areas or just
for a few emergency areas? And I did find out the day they're looking at adding another 375 kW, which is not their whole hospital, to their emergency backup. And I cannot tell you what their emergency backup handles, but I know it's not the whole hospital, because during an outage, one of the things they have to look at, extended outages, 100 degree weather, is do they need to move their patients because they can't keep them cool. Mm-hmm.
On July 1st, that very discussion was held.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. McKittrick?
Generators.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to bring up a couple of points of information for everybody. Mike had mentioned that during the specific dates of those storms that came through, our police department had received a substantial number of calls from customers. A great percentage of those calls were folks calling in asking when the service would be restored. Those calls can only be answered with estimates. Those calls block the other calls from coming in reporting where we have downed lines or outages. I would encourage folks, if possible, to not make the calls asking the question. The standard answer is as soon as we can get it repaired. If you're reporting an outage, absolutely we want to know that, but to call in and ask for an estimate or a guesstimate of restoration time is really prohibiting other calls from getting into us. And in order to address that, right now we're working on setting up an information line so that the folks that are reporting outages can call Public Works or the police department to let them know. And for folks that want to know an estimate of restoration, we'll be setting up an information line where they can call and get updates on that. I can't give you a time, a date that will be online, but we are working, and not just for power outages, but any time that we may have a critical incident that folks need information on. And in addition to that, we'll have extensions for general information, other topics and subjects that they can dial up for other general information. But we are working on that. So I just want to mention that because it is, as I said, a substantial number of folks that are calling in asking the question that we really don't have information for, and it does block those other calls coming in. So, thank you.
Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mike, with the concentration of the Tree removal, folks in your department or in Public Works, because the ash borer disease, have we lost any progress towards removing branches or trees that might affect, seriously affect the electric lines in a major storm?
We have continued with our tree trimming, and the removal of the ash trees have mainly been done by the streets department.
Right.
And we have not curtailed our program of trimming the trees for electric lines at all.
Okay. Good. Good to hear. I have had a question from Commonwealth Edison. Do you have difficulties with the trees causing outages or collapsing the lines?
One of your major drivers.
And do you have programs that are helping the local communities to remove some of those trees or branches, or do you do that on your own?
We have a 4-year tree trimming cycle.
Yes.
On each of our feeders, and that is adhered to because we need to report out to the Illinois Commerce Commission. In addition to that, we do have a 2-year spot cycle trim where they will identify fast-growing or trees that would pose a dangerous situation.
Okay, good. I did hear the 4-year term and then something about 2 years, but I wasn't sure about that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Marks.
Mike, probably a question for you. Do you see Geneva going to towards those smart meters or not at this point? I mean, a good question. I can tell by that smile.
Yes, yes.
Or is that a lot more infrastructure for us, actually?
Right now, we're replacing the meters with a remote metering system.
Okay.
We do not have the infrastructure in place to make utilize the total smart meter abilities because of the cost.
Okay. I just wondered if we were at least looking at that. But the meters now are remote. Do those help you tell on where outages are or not, or is that just help us with the meter reading?
That's just helping us with the meter reading. Mm-hmm. And again, as Sylvia alluded to, our program's a 10-year program.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think, Mary, it's great to hear that we're setting up an information line, because, and I think it's a lot that we need to teach the public, because a lot of people didn't like the Twitter until you can tell them that they just can sign up for just the Geneva as a feed, because a lot of people didn't want that. You know, to be on that Twitter, and I don't think a lot of people realized, and I was one of them also, that you could just sign up for Geneva on a standalone, and I think that education needs to help. And to get an information line, I think, is even better, because I don't know about the rest of the aldermen, but I seem to get a lot of phone calls when the power goes out of when it's coming back up, and I can only say I have no better idea than they do.
Well, we do have Geneva mail as well. If you're able to get email, we do send out email Geneva mail alerts, as well as the text messages through Twitter.
Alderman Singer.
Thank you. I've often thought that it might be worth our while if we could possibly just enlighten our community when it comes to the planting of trees, particularly around their property and along areas where there are power lines, as to we do have restrictions in our community as to the kinds of trees we do plant and do not allow to be planted. But possibly if we could have communities, our people in our community understand that certain trees grow at certain heights and some shouldn't be planted under power lines because they are going to interfere with those power lines. And if we could have some means or some understandings possibly directed towards those people, the people in our community, to, in a sense, in the say that it would be probably best if you didn't put that kind of a tree in that particular location because of the issues that it can create. And that's where oftentimes many of the problems are. It's really with those trees. And then I get so many people complaining to me about the trimming of the trees. They're coming in there and they just chop the tree to such an extent they say it's just ugly, you know, it's not what we anticipated the tree to look like, but that's the issue here. You're going to put a tree under a power line, it's going to grow and create a problem. and it's got to be trimmed, and that's where you're at. So it might be worth our while if we can, in a sense, have some means of directing people to be cautious about the kinds of trees that they do plant under those power lines. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else? Mike and Dan.
Thank
you. Our friends from ComEd, thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much.
And thank you for taking up the majority of the evening.
Everything you want to know about to ask.
Item 4, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments this evening? Item 5 is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and can be enacted by one motion.
So move.
Second.
Alderman Singer makes that motion. Alderman Marks makes the second. Mr. Dantino?
I'd like to remove 4D because I have a question on 4D. I wasn't here last week. It might have been answered, but I'd like to...
11D?
11D.
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 Oh, yes. Okay.
11D, yeah.
Does the motioner and seconder concur with that?
Yes.
Okay. Forgive me. Doesn't need that. Got it. All in favor of the omnibus agenda as amended, please indicate by saying aye. No,
aye.
Roll call. I'm sorry. Oops, forgive me.
Richard Marks.
Sorry. Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Don Cummings.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Arthur Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Item 10, municipal bills for payment. We kindly ask our city clerk to read the bills for consideration.
Bills for payment total $740,779.87.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills as read. The individual invoices can be found on the city website under the city council packet for tonight.
The motion by Brown is accepted. Is there a second? Seconded by Alderman Hill. Any questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Don Cummings.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. We jump down to item 11D, as in David, which was removed from the consent agenda by Alderman Dantino. Mr. Dantino, the floor is yours.
Question is, and this might have been answered last week, but we are accepting the proposal. I recommend to accept the proposal from Sickage. I don't know if I said that right.
Yes,
you did.
And I know it's under the $30,000 that was budgeted, but why did we jump to them instead of the other bids that were almost $9,000, almost $10,000 lower?
Yes, it was answered.
Okay.
Obviously.
You
should have an email with a question or several questions that were answered, and I kind of broke it down. The ones that were less expensive basically did not meet the criteria of the RFP.
Okay. I'll look at the email. I didn't see it.
If you don't have it, let me know, and I'll resend it to you.
Okay. That's acceptable. Thank you. So I'll make a motion that we approve 4D. 11D.
Dantino makes the motion. The second is offered by Alderman Hill. A roll call vote is in order. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Don Cummings.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. New business. Any new business from the two people with extraordinary duration in the audience? From the council? Alderman Flanagan.
I just wanted to thank whoever brought that topic up to the podium, to the discussion level today about the electricity. I thought it was
Alderman Singer.
Hopefully we can have a lot of people who will watch it and answer their questions or have their questions answered by that whole discussion. So I thank you.
Thank you for that compliment.
Anyone else? New business? If not, a motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
Alderman Marks makes the motion.
Second.
Alderman Singer makes the second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Good night, everyone.